This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Higgs Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The Libyan ambassador painted a picture of incredible chaos inside Libya, where the authorities are unable to control the borders. They don't seem to have the facilities for major Coast Guard patrol, and they're certainly unable to stop the flow of migrants.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome with details from the Libyan ambassador's news conference today.
Also, Human Rights Watch reports the government of Sudan arrested and deported 442 Eritreans this month in violation of international law. And the UN seeks treaty ratification for the protection of children from prostitution, pornography, and service as child soldiers.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, a Libyan diplomat says there's little his country can do at this time to stem the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe. Libya's ambassador to Italy held a news conference today in Rome to talk about conditions in his country. From the Italian capital, reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the ambassador's remarks and other migrant-related news.
The Libyan ambassador, Ahmed El Mabrouk Safar, came to the Foreign Press Club to address international media from across Europe and the U.S. about the situation inside Libya. What was really alarming about this press conference was the Libyan ambassador painted a picture of incredible chaos inside Libya, where the authorities are unable to control the borders. They don't seem to have the facilities for major Coast Guard patrol, and they're certainly unable to stop the flow of migrants that is coming through the south of the country from sub-Saharan Africa. And he kept talking about supply and demand, saying where there's a demand, this flow of migrants will continue.
Did he mention anything about asking the EU to increase naval patrols to try to deal with this?
Well, he did say that Libya can't do it on its own, and there is a great deal of cooperation going on between Italy and Libya. But he said that really they need a lot more. He used the expression, the might of Europe. We are still waiting for the might of Europe. And while there has been some political and diplomatic progress, he described this as a work in progress, where they're really needing a lot more support. So it's not a very confident outlook from where this ambassador was speaking today.
We've gotten some more information from UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, regarding how deadly a week it was last week for the migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean. What are the latest figures that you have?
Well, the UNHCR has recalculated the number of deaths that they believe emerged from the disasters across the Mediterranean last week, and they say that total number of deaths is now around 880. It's always difficult to estimate. Some bodies will never be recovered. Some were lost in the passage across the Mediterranean, but that's the figure that they've come up with after speaking to some of the survivors who've landed on the coast of Italy.
Last year, we saw a picture of a dead child, a migrant child, which stirred up a lot of controversy and emotion regarding this whole crisis. But now there is a new picture that's going viral regarding a dead baby. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, a German rescuer from a vessel run by an organization called Sea-Watch has been pictured holding this drowned baby. It's such a dramatic, emotional picture. And it was taken on the 27th of May, last Friday. The baby looks to be no more than a year old, and the rescuer pulled this baby from the sea. He said in an interview that the child had its arms outstretched almost like a doll, and it just sounds so incredibly moving. 45 bodies were recovered from that vessel and 135 people survived. And it's not known if the mother and father of that baby survived the passage across the Mediterranean. And we're not even sure which country this baby comes from. But it's just such a powerful picture. And the people who were involved in that rescue want that picture to go around the world. It has gone viral because they say that European authorities should be doing more to create a safe humanitarian corridor for these immigrants who are on these very dangerous vessels.
Well, does Europe or does Italy have enough centers for the migrants once they arrive?
There is concern right now that Italy is a bit overloaded with the number of immigrants who have been arriving. And the government has indicated it's going to open 3 new centres, 2 in Sicily and 1 on the island of Sardinia. There is a huge debate going on in Italy about whether that's appropriate. Is the government creating a situation where immigrants will be staying in the country long term? And if you like, an economy of dependence. Some parallels have been drawn with Greece. And there's also a growing debate about what's going on to repatriate some of these immigrants who shouldn't be given asylum.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
So far this year, more than 2,500 migrants and refugees have died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. That's about 600 more than the same period a year ago. Also, the UNHCR is very critical of how few refugees have been resettled since last year. It says the European Union has resettled only about 2,000 people, despite a plan to resettle 160,000. The UNHCR calls that shameful. In Germany, a firefighter has confessed to an arson attack on a home for asylum seekers. The Associated Press reports the 25-year-old man is accused of attempted murder. He told the German court that at the time he considered all refugees as criminals. None of the 7 Syrian refugees inside the home was injured and little damage was done. The unidentified firefighter said during his confession that he had changed his mind and now finds asylum seekers awfully nice. In other news, Czech police say they have broken a criminal network producing false Lithuanian passports for migrants. The 10 suspects are believed to be from the former Soviet republics. And in Sicily, prosecutors say 16 suspected people smugglers have been arrested. They were aboard a vessel carrying 900 migrants that were intercepted over the weekend.
Human Rights Watch reports the government of Sudan arrested and deported 442 Eritreans this month in violation of international law. The rights group says 5 of the Eritreans were registered as refugees. It says none of the others was given an opportunity to apply to the UN Refugee Agency for asylum status. Khartoum has repeatedly denied the UN agency access to asylum seekers. Human Rights Watch says all Eritrean citizens under the age of 50 must serve an indefinite military service. The group says fleeing from Eritrea is considered desertion, which carries a harsh punishment. There's a move underway to strengthen the international treaty to protect children. UN experts are urging the ratification of what's called optional protocols to the Convention on the Rights of the Child. They would help protect against the recruitment or sale of young people for prostitution, pornography, and as soldiers. Leyla Zarrougui is the special representative of the UN Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict. She says there is momentum to better protect children under the age of 18, but a final push is needed to achieve ratification. She spoke with me about the ratification process and African countries' commitment to ending abuse, exploitation, and violence against children.
The optional protocol is the mechanism, the treaty that ask member states and also non-state actors, party to conflict, to not recruit children. For non-state actors, they are not allowed to recruit children under the age of 18. For state country, they have to commit, even if they recruit under 18, they don't use them in conflict. So that's the major added value of the treaty, but also put in place tools and the mechanisms that the government have to take action to ensure that children are not recruited. And this, of course, for us is very important. This campaign to get universal ratification is so important because children are recruited by both national army, national security forces, and also, of course, armed groups. And for us, that government adhere to the treaty and sign the treaty and ratify it, that means that it become illegal even for non-state actors in the country where they are operating to recruit children.
How many countries so far in Africa have signed on?
In Africa, we have 10 countries that did not ratify the optional protocol: South Sudan, Somalia, but also Central African Republic, Liberia, Guinea Equatorial, Sao Tome and Principe, Comoros, Zambia. These are countries that did not ratify, in fact, the pact. And the six countries that are on our agenda that did not ratify are our first target. The other, they signed but did not ratify. Now, if we count the countries that did not ratify, we have 18 that did not sign and did not ratify, if we talk about Africa.
What is involved in the ratification process?
That means that you are not allowed under international law to undermine the treaty. That even if you are not party to the treaty, because you sign it, that means you will not take any action that undermines the treaty. When you ratify, you become party to the treaty, you are bound by what is in the treaty, and then you have to domesticate the treaty within your legislation, and you have to ensure that your legislation is in conformity with the treaty, and you have to take the necessary action to implement the treaty.
How will you convince these other countries to sign on?
In the last few months, we get four African countries that ratified. These are Ethiopia, Guinea-Bissau, Ghana, and Guinea. Then I got a strong commitment from Zambia, for example, that they will ratify. We are working closely with the Central African Republic, with Somalia, to get them ratified. Because in Africa, they have already the Charter on the Right and the Welfare of Child that already set the minimum age for recruitment at 18. So they have no reason to not ratify the protocol. So the recruitment also could happen because children don't have certificates that prove their age. So it's important that these countries adhere to the international norms, then they get support. We also use those who are supporting them to respect their own commitment and their own obligation because they already ratified, to ask them, like the U.S., they ratified, and they are working supporting Somalia, supporting other countries. So we ask them to use their leverage to get this country to ratify.
That was Leila Zarugi, Special Representative of the U.N. Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict. She spoke with me from The Hague.
A series of militant attacks has crippled Nigeria's oil industry. Analysts say the dramatic fall in production has put the country on the brink of recession. President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to visit the oil-producing Niger Delta region this week amid the violence. Christine reports from Lagos.
In a communique, a militant group calling itself the Niger Delta Avengers vowed to reduce Nigeria's economy to zero. They may be getting their wish. A series of attacks on pipelines and oil facilities claimed by the militant group has drastically reduced Nigeria's daily oil production. Gail Anderson, research director at Energy Research and Consultancy Group, Wood Mackenzie, says the attacks seem targeted specifically to hurt oil exports.
The attacks themselves have been well targeted, and they've been designed to cause maximum damage, and I think they've been quite successful in that respect.
To what degree they have damaged exports is unclear. Nigeria normally exports about 2.2 million barrels of oil per day. Anderson thinks daily production has dropped by about 560,000 barrels, about 25%. Dilapo Oni, head of energy research at Ecobank, says the drop is much greater and thinks Nigeria is now producing less than 1 million barrels per day. The economy shrank last quarter, and analysts say Nigeria will soon enter a recession. The global drop in the price of crude has also hurt the economy. Oni says Nigeria needs all the oil it can get to balance its books. The new attacks mean it simply isn't getting it.
We're not producing up to the level we need to produce. The government won't generate the amount of revenue it needs to generate from oil.
Militancy in the Niger Delta region is nothing new. A violent insurgency rocked the Delta for much of the second half of the last decade. It ended in 2009 when the government started paying off militants and offering some training programs. But the government is phasing out that program. It is unknown who exactly the Niger Delta Avengers are, or whether they are linked to the former militants. But Oni said the sophistication of the attacks, and the attackers' ability to dodge soldiers sent to guard pipelines, shows that some may have been involved in the previous insurgency.
They carry out attacks at specific times of the day where they know they're able to strike without any reprisal from the enemy.
President Buhari will travel to the Delta's Ogoni land region this week, where he will inaugurate a program to clean up oil spills that have happened in the region. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Twenty-one minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The former First Lady of Ivory Coast went on trial today in Abidjan, accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The charges against Simone Gbagbo stem from her alleged role during the country's 2011 civil war. Her husband, former President Laurent Gbagbo, faces charges of his own before the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Prosecutors allege Mrs. Gbagbo helped plan violence against supporters of Alassane Ouattara, who defeated her husband in presidential elections. In 2015, she had been convicted on other charges and was given a 20-year prison sentence. About 3,000 people died in Ivory Coast civil war.
A lot more people are receiving treatment for HIV/AIDS. At the end of last year, about 17 million people had access to antiretroviral drugs. That's 2 million more than the previous year. UNAIDS has announced the news prior to the UN General Assembly high-level meeting on ending AIDS. It will be held from June 8th to the 10th in New York. UNAIDS says global coverage of antiretroviral therapy reached 46% in 2015. The biggest gains were in Eastern and Southern Africa. Coverage in the two regions increased from 24% in 2010 to 54% in 2015, reaching more than 10 million people.
The World Health Organization reports growing evidence that plain packaging of tobacco products saves lives by reducing demand. To mark World No Tobacco Day, the WHO urges countries to make smoking less attractive by wrapping tobacco products in plain packages. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The type of plain packaging of tobacco products proposed by the World Health Organization stands in sharp contrast to packs featuring rugged cowboys smoking in the great outdoors. Sample packages are black, with large warnings that smoking kills and graphic images of people dying from cancer. Douglas Betcher, WHO's Director for the Prevention of Noncommunicable Diseases, says the point of plain packaging is to reduce demand for tobacco by reducing the attractiveness of these products.
It very clearly labels tobacco for what it is, the only legally available product worldwide that, when used as intended, kills up to half of its users.
WHO reports almost 6 million people a year die prematurely from tobacco-related illnesses. This number is projected to rise to more than 8 million by 2030, with more than 80% of these preventable deaths in developing countries. Australia, in 2012, became the first country to introduce plain packaging of tobacco products, along with new and enlarged health warnings. France and Britain have since followed suit. suit. WHO says other countries, including Ireland, Norway, Singapore, Belgium, and New Zealand, are also planning to implement this measure. Ben McGrady is an Australian lawyer and technical officer at WHO. He says Australia conducted a 34-month review between December 2012 and September 2015 to gauge the impact of plain packaging.
Over that period, there was approximately a 2 percentage point reduction in the prevalence of smoking in Australia. 0.55 percentage points is attributable to the packaging changes.
McGrady says there were an estimated 108,000 fewer smokers over that period as a consequence of the changes to packaging and labeling. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In 1966, New York Senator Robert F. Kennedy made a historic visit to apartheid South Africa, making what many scholars consider the best speech of his life. But half a century later, and on the anniversary of Kennedy's visit, his words still resonate. A delegation of Kennedy family members is touring South Africa to mark the occasion. VOA's Anita Powell followed part of the anniversary tour. She reports from Johannesburg.
Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance.
Robert F. Kennedy delivered those hopeful, defiant words in a very different South Africa. In 1966, the nation seemed concretely locked into the racist apartheid system. The powerful speeches he delivered over his four-day visit raised hopes that the entrenched system might one day end, and his meetings with top anti-apartheid leaders directly defied the nation's leaders. But 50 years later, the senator's words still resonate on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. Race, equality, and social justice are still major issues in both South Africa and the U.S. Both nations are facing elections later this year. South Africa will hold municipal polls. And these issues have, predictably, raised their thorny heads and inspired unpleasant political rhetoric. Kennedy's daughter, Carrie, a human rights activist, says although she believes race relations have improved in both the U.S. and in South Africa, after all, she said, apartheid is over, and her father played a central role in passing the U.S. Civil Rights Act of 1964, change doesn't come from above.
All those changes took place not because governments wanted them to, governments tried to stop them, and not because militaries wanted them to, militaries tried to stop them, and not because huge multinational corporations wanted them to. Multinational corporations tried to stop them, including South Africa. All those changes took place because small groups of determined people harnessed the dream of freedom and made it come true. That's what creates change.
Kennedy's words, delivered this week at Johannesburg's University of the Witwatersrand, found a receptive audience among many young South Africans who have recently expressed disgust as their politicians are mired in scandal after scandal, and millions of people say they have yet to experience the economic equality they were promised when apartheid ended 2 decades ago. But Kennedy said, when times are dark, one thing always shines through, hope. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Go home.